Welcome to the MS Dev Show, episode number 129, a very special live episode of the MS Dev Show with James Whitaker and Donna Sarkar, talking about data and much, much more. I do want to warn you, there is some swearing in this episode, so please be conscious of that. Special thanks to Laura Butler for bringing her amazing cookies. Also, special thanks to Concurrency for helping sponsor the event.
This episode of the MS Dev Show is brought to you by Infragistics, providing tools and solutions to accelerate design, development, insights, and collaboration for any organization.
Today we have James Whitaker, distinguished engineer. How's it going, James?
Very good.
Yeah, we're here at the boardwalk at Microsoft Commons, which is really cool. They opened up just for us.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
They like me. I'm a regular here.
Yeah. What's going on here?
Nancy, thank you.
Your winter ale.
Thank you very much.
And what would you two like?
I'll take an amber ale.
All right.
I'll just take an ice water for the time being. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work, James? She just shows up with a beer for you?
Oh, that's right. You had to order, didn't you?
Yeah. What's going on?
You're doing something wrong, man. Actually, this is a pretty good segue into talking about data.
Yeah.
So Nancy, my bartender, she knows about me, right? Mm-hmm. She has data about my drinking habits. She understands that I like to start a little malty, mm-hmm. less hops, and kind of progress through all the way to the IPAs, you know, 7 or 8 beers later.
Yep.
And she didn't know anything about you all. Yeah. She had to take your order.
Yeah, I just met her tonight. She's great.
So this is UI. And you've probably heard the buzz about invisible UI. Mm-hmm. You just witnessed it right there.
Yeah.
That's invisible UI. I placed an order. I got a drink, right? I had an intent. Mm-hmm. My intent got resolved with nothing in the way.
Okay. How do I do that with Cortana?
That's invisible UI. Well, Cortana is the start at invisible UI. You know, you speak what you want, mm-hmm. or and sometimes she just intuits what you want. Yeah. She looks at your calendar. See, this is all data. What's happening in the world is the entire world is being reduced to data. This is why cars can drive themselves now. They used to not be able to do that because the data wasn't available, mm-hmm. right? Think about, let's hold on the self-driving cars, because okay. I do think that is a good example of there is enough data in the world that we can start doing things that we couldn't do a few years ago. But if you go back to the Human Genome Project, mm-hmm. that is a data analysis project. Started in 1990 and completed in 2013. It took us 13 years to map the human genome. Most of that work over those 13 years was gathering data, just getting the data from, you know, this hospital has some data, this private foundation has some data, this other has some data. And yeah. See, now Nancy has data about you all because she just delivered your drinks.
Yeah, awesome.
And it took a while to get all that data collected. And then the machine learning, then the AI, and then all the algorithms can begin to process the data. We no longer live in that world of the 1990s. We live in a world where data is there, and so that's why cars can drive, because they have the data. They have the data about the roads. They have the data about road closures. They have sensors in the car that tell them that there are obstacles in the path. They know one-way streets. They know two-way streets. They know traffic patterns. That's all data.
Yeah, I'm sure you saw the recent Tesla announcement. Did you parse their headline? Did you see the headline I'm talking about, the recent announcement? They showed this video where the car drove itself from home the whole way to work, and the guy never touched the steering wheel. Did you see that?
I did, yeah.
So the news was going crazy because they, you know, saying, okay, cars can drive themselves, and they can, and it's powered by data. So the interesting distinction there is, if you actually looked at the headline, what Tesla said was, we are now on all of our vehicles, including self-driving hardware. So it's the cameras, it's all the sensors. So the software now has to catch up, but the software on the previous cars, and some of them, they didn't have enough sensors to do the full self-driving. So again, yeah, it's the data that's actually helping.
It's the data. And all these sensors are helping. Mm-hmm. Now, think about it. 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, most of the data in the world was just up on the web.
Yeah.
Scattered all over these various web servers, you know, which is why we call it a web.
Yeah.
Right?
And we couldn't find
because
it.
If you draw, yeah, you can't find it because it's locked in these silos. The cloud has changed all that. And now we have data that is available. And it's all in the same place. It's in the data center. I mean, if you really think about it, the web itself is dead. We don't have a web anymore. No one, or very few people, maintain their own web servers. It used to be everybody.
Yeah. Did. And everybody was pretty excited about doing blogs and personal pages. And what's interesting is they see a lot of people like that starting to go away now.
It's going away.
It's because it's a hassle.
Or and it's just migrating to the cloud.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a personal website and it's up in the cloud. You know, you choose a cloud provider and you sign up and all that stuff is taken care of for
you.
See, this is really a crucial point, though. Data is now all in the same place. This is why it seems magic what's happening now. We talk about AI. We should not talk about AI in terms of ending civilization in a singularity. It sounded
scary.
Ridiculous, didn't it? And now all of a sudden, you know, Elon Musk and Woz and Gates and Stephen Hawking, I mean, legitimately smart people.
Yeah, he's terrified.
Are terrified of this.
Yeah.
Why?
Elon says we are in a simulation.
That's a tough one. That's a tough one. But, you know, the fact is, the data has all in one place. Algorithms can begin to find patterns in that data where they couldn't when it was all scattered across the web.
Yep.
All those web servers are in the same place.
So you mentioned a lot about data and having data, but how do we figure out what's good data to have? How do we know what's kind of the fluff inside that data?
Well, so this is kind of up to people. We don't know good data from bad data until we try to use it. And so I give a lot of talks at colleges and I tell people, go throughout your day, just walk around and think every decision you make, what to eat, where to go listen to music, what radio station to play when you're in your car, every decision you make and think, how would I make that decision without making it, right? How would data make that decision? What data would I use to make that decision for me so I wouldn't have to decide? And you'll find if you do that, just throughout your whole day, do a whole week of that, you're going to find a bunch of places where you know you can make a decision. You're walking around downtown Seattle. Your musical tastes are known. How much money you currently have in your checking account is known. And it'll say, okay, you need to go to the Crocodile tonight because there's a rock and roll band there. We know you like rock and roll. And cover's only $10 because Numo's up the street. It's $25. And they're playing blues and you're not into that.
And
it can just kind of guide you through your day.
Yeah.
So do that. I mean, I want everybody to do that. This is a really interesting exercise. Go throughout your day. Every decision you make, every time you have a choice, think, okay, what data would I use to make that choice? That's the data you want. And then the question is, can you get access to it?
Yeah.
The data you can't get access to, that's the bad data. The data you can get access to and that allows you to make that decision, that's good data.
So like bringing this back to like actual products now, you know, this kind of like helps explain why I kind of feel uneasy about like Alexa and Google Home and stuff like that. It isn't that they're bad products, except that they're limited to the data of the one person who's logged into it. These are things we're supposed to put around our house, but if it only knows me or my wife or one of my kids, it can't interact with all of us. When we look at kind of like, you know, the future in Star Trek, the computer understood everybody on the bridge.
Yeah.
It didn't have to be told, oh, wait, just wait, this is the captain speaking.
Yeah, that's what I want.
Yeah, you never have to tell it. Because it knows, right? Because your voice modulation is data. His voice modulation is different data, and it can tell it apart. But I mean, Alexa, you think about Alexa. Alexa knows a lot of stuff. She knows about a lot of other buyers who are buying things. So if you say you want product X, she's going to know, okay, you're a middle-aged white guy, right? And most other middle-aged white guys buy that, right? And so it's going to be a really easy decision for them.
Yeah.
But there's no, I mean, what's stopping Alexa or any other technology? I'd prefer it to be the Xbox, but what's stopping Alexa or any other technology from doing that? From knowing that your kid can't ask to buy alcohol because it knows your kid is underage. Your kid can't ask to, your 22-year-old daughter can't ask to buy marijuana unless you're in the state of Washington, right? You know, all those rules, it's all just data.
Yeah. And I'm not quite sure what it like. Do you have any grasp on what is actually stopping us? Because it feels like we sort of get closer, and then we take.
It's our imagination.
Back.
That's it.
Yeah.
Right. And I think
I think we know what we want in some cases. Yeah. So that's probably
the best. We know what we want? That's why I give this exercise to my college.
Yeah. Maybe
kids.
Not.
Go out and think about it. What decisions are you making throughout the day? And this is a business opportunity because if you find something, wait a minute, I make this decision 4 or 5 times a week. Everybody in the world must make this decision 4 or 5 times a week.
Yeah.
And if you come up with technology that makes that decision for people, you know, this is the way you make money. You make the billionaires don't make their money millions at a time. They make it 18 cents, 44 cents, $1.29 at a time. You know, Bill Gates got very, very rich selling to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so when you come up with those scenarios, those decision-making scenarios that affect a lot of people, you're going to make money.
Yeah, I know what mine is. I mean, it's my drive-in and factoring in time versus money on tolls and things like that. And Waze keeps getting better and better.
But like, you got it. I mean, self-driving cars are coming.
Yeah.
You know, cars are absolutely a thing of the past. They're a thing of the past. And I actually think that it's going to be illegal for humans to drive in the future.
Yeah.
Because we are not good at processing data.
Yeah, we're horrible.
The data comes in. Well, it's not just that we're bad drivers. We're not good at processing the data.
Yeah.
We will not be able to interact. And we will screw up that whole system because the system will depend on all of the cars obeying the same algorithms. Mm-hmm. Humans are going to be incapable of that. It's going to be illegal to drive. We're going to have to find a, you know, some messed up place nobody ever wants to go to, you know, and I don't know, like Kentucky or some shit like that. And
that's where all the human drivers will go.
Yeah. And just go there because, you know, there's no tech there. I'm from Kentucky. I can say that.
Yeah. So, yeah, you mentioned AI. AI is always very interesting because, like, I feel like the definition, I don't want to say, I want to say perverted, but I want to say, like, it's changed. Like, we've almost lowered our expectations, and I want your take on this because originally AI was like, okay, this thing basically is a human brain, but in electronic form. And then after a time, we're just like, man, that's really hard. So
now it's not all it needs to do is something clever.
Yeah. So now we're like, yeah, if it can, you know, you come home and it's like, hello, welcome home, Jason. You're like, that was AI.
Yeah, that was AI. We give it way too much credit. So yeah. Look, first of all, it's not artificial at all. Mm-hmm. Somebody programmed this in the same way they programmed anything else.
Yeah.
The A really should stand for algorithm, not artificial, because it's a very natural process.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's not intelligent. Mm-hmm. It's a bunch of data processed at scale, right? This is why it looks intelligent because our data is now incredibly organized. We can process it at amazing speeds. I mean, think about it, right? We mapped a human genome with the equivalent of this Windows phone that I carry around with me everywhere I go because it was more powerful than any computer that existed in 1994.
Yeah, performance is doubling
crazy.
You know, every year.
Just crazy,
much.
Crazy, yeah. Crazy. And so, you know, incredibly organized data. Analyzed at speed, and it's impressive, right? So instead of artificially intelligent, it should be, you know, algorithmically impressive. That's what AI should stand for.
I like that.
Hey, I'm patenting that.
When somebody says that, that's what's
going to be. Trademarking that shit right there.
That's pretty good. So what about data in other areas? Where else are we using all this data?
The thing that I am most excited about with data is the Human Brain Project. You all heard about this? So let's go back to the Human Genome Project, 1990 to 2013. First of all, we finished that shit in 13 years. How cool is that? The human race.
I remember that. I was in school and they were talking about how many years it was going to take, and then we finished
it. Stunning. It was supposed to take 100, right?
Yeah.
And it took 13.
Yeah.
And it took 13 because
computers kept doubling.
Because once we got the data organized, the algorithms could begin to find patterns in them like crazy. And so now we're doing the same thing with the Human Brain Project. And the cool thing is the data's there. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got the little slices of the brain. We map them, and you know, they're already beginning to announce some really stunning things, like, you know, what depression looks like, what a panic attack looks like in the brain. I mean, wouldn't it be nice if they solved that shit?
Oh.
Right, like 30 seconds before a panic attack, you'd see the data and panic. And I don't know, maybe it's a little device we insert in there that's dopamine, adrenaline, I don't know what it would be, but you know, you can actually begin to look forward to the end of things like that. I mean, the human brain has got to be the granddaddy of all data pools.
Well, it's
the things that we can do with that are just going to be stunning.
It's the most powerful computer that we're aware of, and we haven't been able to really open it up and understand.
But it's got to be understandable. Yeah. There's nothing there that's not either biological data or some sort of algorithm that we can design that will do that.
And
if you think about it, the human body, your DNA, is all data too. Mm-hmm. And we have only cracked the surface of the data that's in DNA. You know, if you look at this in the extreme, data is responsible for life, right? Data is God. And our DNA is data, and it created us. We don't know how it did it. Are we going to know how we did it? Of course we are.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to break that.
Yeah.
We mapped the human genome in 13 years with Windows phones.
Yeah.
Right?
I heard this thought experiment at one point. It was actually posed as a question.
I teach thought experiments in my creativity class.
It was posed actually like as a question on Reddit. And it was basically like, if you took, you know, your Windows phone there, you put it in a time machine and you sent it back, you know, 20 years and gave it to, you know, insert big tech company at the time. Like, you know, you hand it to them and you're like, here you go. Here's the keys of the kingdom. Like, how long would it take?
Well, if you watch Ancient Aliens, that's where all this shit came from. Yeah. Right? There was something crashed, and we're you know, reverse engineering all this stuff, even as.
But it just reminds me of that. It's like we have.
Which isn't right. All this technology is perfectly explainable by Moore's law. We didn't get it from aliens.
Yeah.
But it's continuing to grow. Are you all worried about Moore's law ending?
Yeah, well, I heard it's, my understanding is it's already slowing down in some regards.
I don't think it's slowing down.
Jason, remember that chart that we had last week with the speed of transistors in our production? Yeah. I mean, those were just straight lines going amazingly steep.
How many was it per second? I think it was...
It was like a trillion.
I want to say a trillion transistors.
Moore's law has been incredibly reliable.
Yeah.
But silicon can only get so thin and still dissipate heat.
That's what's happening.
It's going to stop.
Yeah, it's that nanometer process that they're down to like 5 nanometers or something.
So what are we going to do? What do you all think? I mean...
Well, I don't know. Quantum computers, I don't know.
Quantum computers, replacements for silicon.
Quantum computers don't seem to be like saving us yet. Really, at this
point, we're making good progress on quantum computers, quantum computers replacing the general purpose computer is a further stretch than quantum computers solving very specific problems.
Yeah,
like crunching the data in the human brain project. Yeah. So it could be that, you know, there's a branch there, but there are other things. There's carbon nanotubes. There's silicon germanium mixes. There's graphene.
Yeah,
but right? there are other.
But
substances
here's the thing, though. Does it even matter? Because here's the thing. Like, how do we deal with the fact that processors aren't as fast as we want them to be? We just make more. Right. Look at the cloud. Right. Like, if your phone isn't fast enough, you have a giant data center located, you know, who knows where.
The phone is fast enough. People need to slow down a little bit. Yeah. You know, ultimately, it's not going to be technology that saves us. It's going to be people's creativity applied to technology.
Have you seen this? I think we talked about this on the last show. I can't remember. We had somebody figure.
You don't remember your own shows?
No. I don't know.
The processors are too fast.
Who's this guy? No, there was somebody. And if we didn't have a link to it in the show notes, we'll put it in the show notes for this episode. But somebody was using the new G-Series. Are you familiar with the G-Series SKUs in Azure?
Yeah.
The GPU-enabled SKUs in Azure. And they're basically like super high-performance GPUs. Well, your phone isn't fast enough to play like a really high-resolution 3D game, but guess what? The cloud is.
Yep.
And they actually figured out how to stream that game down at 60 frames per second at full resolution. So on a low-powered laptop, he was playing a full-resolution game
using the
power of the cloud.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So the fact that we can like magically transport computing power in like space and time, I think that just overcomes it. Like, who cares? They're creating a trillion transistors
a
second.
The question is, where are we going to transport that to? Are we always going to be carrying screens around, or is all that data going to be transported to sensors that are around us?
Yeah. So,
I mean,
so what
I definitely
does it look
foresee
like?
I foresee the end of the screen.
Yeah.
Because the data solves this problem. I mean, mostly I use the screen for telling my computing infrastructure, hey, this is my intent.
Yeah.
And then my computing infrastructure set going out and saying, oh, here's some possibilities.
Yeah. And it list sucks. Up them, I mean,
left
like,
swipe, right swipe.
Yeah.
That should go away.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have a thought. I work with a lot of enterprises during the day. And kind of like one of the key things like on enterprise is when they collect data is they got to lock it down. So what kind of implications does that have when we have this data?
You mean an enterprise locking their data down and not making it available to the rest of the world?
Well, not only just that, but you know, there are concerns like when anybody takes their data and makes it private, or data that may be out there that somebody wishes were private.
Ah, private. So you said part of the privacy word. So let's talk about that. I mean, mm-hmm. if you think about it, you know, the fact that Nancy knew what beer to deliver me and had to take your order, that's kind of a privacy issue. I have ceded that data.
Yeah.
You know, my drinking habits to something else, and you all haven't, and you were disadvantaged by
it,
right? I got my drink and I get to enjoy it and you all don't. And I think privacy is going to become more like that. The more data that all the sensors in the world and the computing infrastructure and the cloud has about you, the better it's going to be able to serve you. And so I think people are going to be less and less and less worried about, oh, I'm giving up my private data, and actually incented it. I want you to know more about me so that I can get the answers I need faster. And so the question is, what do we do? What do we get back, right? Because right now we give up our privacy to Google. We give up our privacy to all these companies. Yeah. And what do we get back? You know, Google's placing ads on my videos and I don't get a penny out of any of those things. I'm giving up all of my intellectual property and Google is making money on it. And they make it very difficult for me to say, hey, take that shit off my video because there's hundreds and then you multiply that, whatever effort that is by hundreds. I'm not going to do that. It's too much work. I'm too busy of a person. And so when you're incented, when you get better service, in this case, I got a nice beer and you didn't.
Yeah.
I'm incented to do that.
So, and so leading, the challenge, leading with value. And then
that's a challenge for the companies. That's a challenge for the Microsofts and the Googles of the world is to figure out that value proposition. So, I mean, how cool would it be if all the CEOs of all these companies had to get up once a quarter and say, hey, here's all the shit we know about you, right? And here's what you're getting in return. Are we okay? Because if you're not, you've got a problem. And I think Google has a problem.
Yeah.
I'm not getting enough value, right? Free searches isn't enough. Yeah. And that's going away. We're not going to have to search in the future. The infrastructure is going to know how are you going to advertise and answer.
Which means Google's got a big problem.
Google's got a big problem. They have to figure out how to actually make money by another means than advertising. It's a tough problem.
So how do we know when we're kind of like selling ourselves too thin for the value we're getting?
Well, we because are doesn't now. That, everyone is now.
Doesn't that perpetuate that cycle at the moment?
I mean, I think, though, that it's changing. As long as we have a screen and we have choices and our brain is required to make a decision, advertisements are just the perfect little monetization mechanism. Once that goes away, once that, you know what, 99.9% of the people who had this intent that you have right now resolved it this way, of course you're going to want to resolve it this way. You get the answer and you go on. You can't insert an ad in that. And so it's a big problem for companies that have ads. And what do you learn about that? You get an answer and you implement that answer and the people live their lives. And so that's it. That's the value. I get to live my life. That's the value of me giving up my personal information.
So what do you think about micropayments? Do you think that's viable?
Micropayments are the future, right? You think about all these developers who've written all these apps. I you know, the story I tell all there's the peeing at the movies scenario.
Yeah. Well, right? Tell it again.
Everybody goes to the movies, and nobody has this app that tells you when to pee at the movies. Right? There is an app. It's called Run Pee. It's awesome. And they've curated all the data. Like, okay, here's
I've used it.
That's a great app, right? Everybody goes to movies, and yet every time I ask people, do you know about this app? Everybody's like, no, I don't know about this app.
And that's solving like a really major problem because, I sort of...
No. Solving a really small problem. And I think this is the point. It's a small problem.
But common.
But this is it. Your day is full of small problems.
Yeah.
Small, common problems. And so those people, there's millions of people that go to the movies every day. A lot of them have to pee while they're there. They end up missing something. Would they be willing to pay 4 cents? Or even better, I think, you know, Azure could pay that. Because if that data is in the Azure ecosystem and we end up finding, this is how I think it's going to work, right? Your infrastructure, your wearables, whatever you have is going to figure out this is this person's intent. And that person, it might be pee at the movies. And if you think about it, that's data, right? The last time I was geolocated in a toilet, that's data. Mm-hmm. You know, my mean time to bladder evacuation, that's data. The fact that I bought a beer before I went into the movie theater, that's data. It's all data. My machine, we'll call her Cortana just for fun of it, right? Cortana knows I have to pee.
Yeah.
And then Cortana can go up in the cloud and say, is there any solution for this? And if there is a solution that claims that, then, you know, is it used? Do other people find it useful? That's all data.
Oh, my brain's going crazy.
All of a sudden, I
have a medical issue. It could tell you about that. But
it could. It totally could.
Yeah. And I would, you know, going back to what you said before, I would totally give up my pee privacy for that benefit, because like even like before the show, like I always have to make sure I use the bathroom before the show, you know, that you don't want to be in the middle of the show.
That's why we started late.
So totally give up my privacy for that.
And so then the question is, instead of 99 cents for those that Run Pee app, you're paying 4 cents, 8 cents, whatever. And I really think that we could use the ads auction algorithms that already exist to determine the cost of an ad, to determine the value of actual data. Mm-hmm. We don't have to code anything new. And so what it requires developers to do is say, okay, forget the UI. Right? Back to the invisible UI that we talked about. Forget the UI. Mm-hmm. That's not important. Cortana, Siri, Google Now, let's just be nice to our competition.
Yeah.
They're going to determine intent. So I take my data and then I list, here's all the intents that I solve with this data. And if you lie, you don't get by with it because big data is going to show, no, people are rejecting the solution for this intent. And the winner is going to bubble up. The one with the best value is going to bubble up to the top. So yeah, of course, that run pee dev, you ask him, would you like 4 cents every time somebody pees? Or would you like 99 cents every time someone manages to discover you in the app store? They're going to take the micropayment. And the money's already in the ecosystem. People are paying Azure subscriptions. People are paying Office 365 subscriptions. The money's already in the ecosystem.
Absolutely. Do we want to talk about augmented reality?
Augmented reality. So all right, we did kill the screen, didn't we?
Yeah.
Why do you need a screen to determine intent or determine options?
Yeah, when the waitress came up here, I wanted to see her name, like just right above her.
Yeah, and so how would you do that?
Not
by looking at this screen.
Yeah.
So you'd need something like HoloLens or.
Yeah. I saw a guy one time in the commons right near here wearing a HoloLens while he was eating lunch.
What was he looking at? Because you could really mess with that person. You could leave like some bacteria hologram, at that table.
Yeah. So or like a finger or a chicken leg or something like that. Who knows? Yeah.
Is there anybody here that knows anything about mixed reality?
Yeah, we need somebody that knows something about that.
No, I think we're.
I just felt a wave of diva.
Did someone say holograms?
Diva, we have a. That diva is now a verb. I didn't know that.
Yeah, you diva'd in. You I diva'd in. Yeah, we all diva in. That's what we do.
I'm a diva.
Of course you are. You're more of a diva than all of us. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So this is Donna
Sarkar, people.
Hi. What are we doing?
So we killed the screens, Donna. We decided that our intent now is data.
Okay.
The world around us that can satisfy that intent is data.
Oh, obviously.
So why would we need screens? And the only thing we could think of is occasionally you might want to actually see another human. You might want to be entertained in some fashion.
Right. But why do you need that when you can just project stuff on walls or here or there?
That's what I want.
Yeah. So
screens
instead
everywhere.
Yeah. So everything is a screen.
Oh, wait, I'm just getting comfortable with being a diva. Now
right.
I'm a screen.
Now you're
as
a screen.
Well.
Yeah, now you're a screen as well. But you know, like guys, we're in the world of mixed and augmented reality. But soon after that, we're gonna augment the human. Mm-hmm. I'm super ready to augment the human. So you'll get to actually see it on your arm.
Now I'm an android.
No, you're just augmenting the human. That's a basic bitch term.
We need to augment a microphone near James.
Okay, so now, am I not loud enough?
Oh, James is not loud enough?
This will make me louder.
I know. James is not loud enough.
Everybody drink.
Okay, so we are already augmenting the human, right? Like prosthetics, better.
I'm augmented. I got a bum knee. It's augmented.
Yeah, I've actually heard about people like wearing hearing aids just to improve their world. Not even that they have a hearing issue.
Of course.
But they want to add additional audible information.
Yeah, absolutely. So between, prosthetics, better hearing aids, people's knees and such being replaced by 3D printed parts that are exact copy. You heard about like the 3D printed organs and stuff like that, right? It's already happening to make a carbon copy of the people.
I do think that's cool that we are beginning to 3D print proteins, right?
Yeah.
Sugars were pretty easy.
Right.
In fact, this year, the 3D printing has just gone crazy, right?
Yeah.
Proteins, metals, carbon fibers.
That's right.
Crazy stuff.
Yeah.
They're printing houses.
Yeah. Well, as the population of Earth grows, our natural resources are not going to be able to keep up, right?
So what do you think of Pokemon Go? What did that do for the whole augmented mixed reality?
Do you play it?
Thing?
I don't play it.
Is that one app that allowed everybody to kind of get comfortable with it?
It's the one thing that allows for easier storytelling. So when Uber came out, explaining humans as inventory became simple, right? When Uber came out.
Now I'm inventory. I'm a lot of shit.
I know. Diva. But once Uber and Airbnb came out, right? Humans as inventory became like pretty easy to explain. Humans and humans property. Like it says so in platform revolution. Like Mike Angiulo just told me yesterday, Airbnb, biggest hotel industry, they own no hotels. Uber, right. biggest, you know, car fleet, they own no cars. But they own your location and a spot on your phone. So your possessions are now other people's possessions. But you think about, like, going forward, how we can evolve this. Because 90% of our things sit idle 90% of the time, right? Mm-hmm. So everything you own, seriously idle 90% of the time, other than probably your phone or maybe your PC.
Yeah, we have thousands of dollars worth of hardware here right. that we use once a week.
Exactly, right?
Yeah, so my kegerator is the only non-idle hardware.
I know, I believe your kegerator is non-idle ever.
Non-idle.
But when I think about my possessions, whether it's my car or my house or whatever it is, or the clothes in my closet, they're idle 90% of the time, not being used. So what does that mean in this world with like mass overpopulation and just excess of stuff? Because the cost of making stuff is just getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. We just don't have space for it, right? So how can we leverage the sharing economy more? And, you know, as tech gets more and more screenless, we don't need more screens. We just don't need more screens on stuff. So how can we have it so anything is a screen, but when we want it to be, right? So how can we use the one thing in our life that we always have with us, like this mobile device, project a thing, anything can be a screen, or nothing can be a screen.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that HoloLens is going to get so crazy it's going to go from this, to contacts, to implants, to, I mean, are we going to be augmented in that?
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, why not? Because when we think about what is possible right now, it's like child's play compared to what's going to be possible in 5 years, mm-hmm. right? So I think you were asking, what did Pokemon Go do? It got people used to the idea that you can augment reality pretty easily. It's not this mythical thing that you need some contraption on your head, right? It can be something as simple as this. So if you can augment reality with this, then why can't you just...
augmenting reality with this in 2016 is a smart thing to do.
Right.
In 2020, I don't know.
This will be super basic,
around.
Right? It could be that in 2020... you've just got a thing in your arm and you just project. And there
you
go.
The bar is
that a tattoo or a brand?
It's all. I'm augmenting the human. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
I should augment.
I'm glad they didn't make me the Windows Insider.
You have to. She's got a hashtag.
It says Windsiders for Good. It's all about how the Windows Insiders use technology to make a lasting impact on the world.
I think we're going to get some at the party tonight, some Windows Insiders.
Yeah, that's
I'm sure we will. We're everywhere. We are everywhere. Windows Insiders are everywhere. There's millions of us.
Yeah.
There's an army of millions out there.
So the bar for me for this augmented reality is always like, I remember faces really well. I have a really hard time with names. Yeah. Like for me, if there's some way that I can, you know, basically have that person whisper in my ear, like, you know, that's James and here's his birthday and it happens to be today. And
I'm going to hack his
He
shit.
Likes beer.
Everybody's going to have the wrong name.
Well, I won't trust
everyone.
Like,
everyone's going to be Betty.
Yeah. This is all James. It's his birthday. Yeah. Buy him a beer. That's all your ear's going
to
say.
So what year are we going to have that where I can have that without, you know, holding a camera up to you?
We're not Ray Kurzweil. We don't give years.
Well, so one of the things that has me excited is, so we talked about earlier about like automated cars so that they drive, you know, without us. Yeah. But there's a lot of laws in place about that.
Right.
There's not many laws that are talking about what the limits are, what we can do to augment and progress that technology, both, you know, with the silicon pieces and the medical pieces.
Right.
So I think that's ripe for a lot quicker innovation, or at least quicker adoption of the acceptance of it.
That's right. It's because the idea itself is new, right? Like when you think about these decades old policies that have been in place, it's very hard to change because they were made for a world where, you know, cars were like this new idea. Mm-hmm. We're still following laws that were made like during the era of the steam engine. Right?
We always will be.
Yeah.
I mean, our industry has pushed legislation.
We have pushed
hard.
Like you saw Uber's epic battle up the hill, right?
Yeah.
With legislation and things, or Airbnb.
They
and
really take it personally
fighting.
When we kill entire industries.
Exactly. They're like, God damn it. And you see all the drama in Austin. They're like, no Uber, Airbnb, 30 copies pop up. It's like, guys,
so
you can't stop innovation, right? Yeah. You can't stop innovation.
Yeah.
It was like the publishing industry's fight, or Hachette Books fight with Amazon. Amazon, right? They're like, oh, you can't do this. You're like, rule someone else's opinion. That's cute, right?
I love that. Rule for someone else's
damn
opinion.
Damn straight. Yeah.
I'm going to say that next time I get arrested.
It's true. Those are laws.
Oh, laws are wrong.
Laws are written down somewhere. You go to jail, James.
Okay.
But rules are someone else's opinion because someone had an opinion once and someone wrote it down and said, okay, that's a rule. Everyone follow it. And they were made in a time that was so long ago that nothing is the same, right? It was made in a time when we had telephones and switchboard operators. We had phones like attached to walls and houses. You and I talked about this.
They're not going to keep up, right? No, they're not going to keep up.
These
we
rules
are going
make
to have
no
to
sense.
Push them.
Of course.
And then they'll try their best to figure it out.
They'll try their best
or they
to
won't figure
get
it out.
But the thing is that it's what's going to happen is the next generation of people, the current generation, the next generation, they're going to grow up and become lawmakers. And they're going to say, I don't even know why this is a rule. And someone just has to point this out.
So this, I think, is the inflection point. Mm. And particularly Gen Z and maybe the younger millennials. Mm. They don't care about privacy the way we care about privacy.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And they're willing to experiment. And,
that's right.
You know, okay, we haven't figured this out. We're going to do it anyhow.
We're going to do it anyway.
They were born into the value.
In our generation, not so much.
Right.
Not so much.
So for them, things are reversible, right? Like control Z has always been a thing for them. Things are reversible. Let's go try it. Didn't work. That's cool. Let's try something different. Right. It's not like the end of days that it used to be in our generation where not even our generation previous, where you're born, you go, you know, apprentice or you work as an intern somewhere.
And you shoot the shit you don't like.
Right.
Yeah.
And you do that.
I'm from Kentucky. That's the way we grow.
They shoot the shit apparently. But you look at like previous generations, you grow up, you go to college, maybe you get a job. And you go work at that job until you die at 45 because you just don't have any information otherwise other than the degree you got or the person you apprenticed under, right? You just simply don't have the information. Now,
that was the way I was brought up.
Right? But you think about the diversity of people nowadays and not just diversity in terms of race or color or whatever, but from the time that these kids are able to like use their fingers and toes, they're talking to people in like South Africa and Singapore.
God, Gen Z's using their fucking toes.
Right?
Did you hear that?
But there's no one
no
who's
they're smarter than
there's
we
no
are.
Of course they're smarter than we are. They have more information now by the time they're five.
They got toes. What else do you need?
I don't know, you've got but they have more information by the time they're five than we've had in our lifetime.
And they're comfortable with it.
Of course. They like it.
They're not scared of
to
it
them,
at all.
To them, information is information acquired through technology is a part of their brain, is an extension of their brain. We always fixate. We're like, oh, you know, tech is so bad for the brain. We're like, no, tech is the brain. Mm-hmm. To them, they're already augmented, right? Because it's not what they happen to know right here. It's what they can know in 5 minutes, right?
Do you remember those conversations where we'd like argue, like, who is that actor that was in that
movie?
Why
are you fighting about this? Look it up,
exactly.
Right? It doesn't matter, It doesn't matter. It's not like tech is going to go somewhere.
So what does that do for education? I mean, if you look at old industries, our education system was designed 150 years
ago. What is this?
That's my beer. That's what that is.
Rules are someone else's opinion. It's not my
beer. There should be laws about my beer.
They apparently don't have enough information on her either.
There you go.
Automatic beer.
Nancy, can we two more?
Wow.
Oh, she disappeared. Okay. She's like,
good luck with that.
Same? Two of them? Yeah.
But guys, like, you know, like Satya always says, it's not what you know, it's what you can learn.
See, thanks to
learn.
You introduced an interface in this. Otherwise, the system would have just rolled with it.
No one was stealing your beer until I just did this.
We're gonna have to code an exception for this, I think.
Why? Because no one stole your beer yet? That's sad.
That is sad, isn't it?
I know, that is sad. First thing you gotta do is steal his beer.
So education.
See if the IoT beer filler thing's working yet.
So what should we be teaching kids in an era where the information is there, answers is there? Why are they studying?
We should teach kids how to curate and process.
Yeah.
Right? And how to identify.
I like the word curate.
I love the word curate.
I really think teachers should be curators.
That's right. Absolutely.
Finding the best information to impact their students.
I think teaching communication is probably the most important thing. Like, how do you create content? How do you consume content? And how do you actually move people? Because right now we all sell constantly, right? Whether it's a product, an idea, a service, a piece of information. But people don't know how to move others. They don't know how to persuade and convince. Oh, hi, thank you.
That isn't it beautiful?
It is beautiful. Yeah. What are we having here? What's this?
It's a winter ale. It's gorgeous. Because you know it's winter and all.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice, isn't it? Malty.
It's really nice.
A little bit of hoppy.
I love it.
Somewhere around 30 IBUs, which is just about right for a winter ale.
I don't know what you're talking about anymore, but I think that...
It's data.
It's all beer data.
Okay, so I think this is what we have to teach people. James.
Just point your phone.
I will drink your beer and mine, I swear to God.
The analysis
I will
do it.
You know I will. You know. Okay. But seriously, like when we think about what we have to teach people, it's how to create content that's good and high quality per the audience, right? How do you create content for the audience you're targeting? What is the best way to consume content? What are the best sources to consume content? And what content, what question are you trying to answer? Mm-hmm. That'll help you consume the right content.
That's right. So content is data. Yeah. And this is, right. You missed this part, but I was, you know, when I give talks at universities, I tell them, go throughout your day.
Yeah.
Every decision you make, figure out how to make it without your brain involved.
Mm-hmm.
Just data.
Mm-hmm.
What is the data involved making that decision?
That's right.
It's empowering.
It is empowering. Because the amount of data that's out there, you can answer any question.
You can answer any question.
Right? It's no longer at that point where students need to go ask their teacher. Right? But I actually think...
The teacher might actually be the worst person.
Right, exactly. Because they're relaying some old information back in the day if they're not the kind of teacher who's like, let's go look it up together.
Old wives' tales.
So how do we spark this creativity in people?
Oh.
Creativity. Who knows something about creativity?
Let's see.
Creativity is a real...
Do we have another guest?
It's a real problem.
We can talk about this all day. So James and I are starting a movement. Did you tell him?
No, I didn't tell him. You
didn't tell him about the movement? Okay, ready? Ready?
Yeah,
okay. We're ready.
Are they ready?
Are you? You guys ready?
They look ready.
That's us.
Ready? Ready.
Okay. We're ready.
The Unstarving Artists Movement.
Infragistics, Ultimate UX and UI Tools, and Enterprise Mobility Solutions, SharePlus and ReportPlus, enable high-performance apps on any device, faster data insights, simplified collaboration, and market-leading security, all backed by comprehensive support. With Infragistics' Ultimate UX and UI Development Toolkit, you can ensure mission-critical applications delivering a superior user experience on the desktop, web, and native device environments for iOS and Android. With the latest BI tools, wow your users with dashboards providing the data insights that they need when and where they need it, all at a low total cost of ownership. Try it today. Download a free trial at infragistics.com and follow them for the latest updates in UX and UI development, reporting, and collaboration at Infragistics on Twitter. And remember, each week, if we pick your comment on the show, you will get a free copy of Infragistics Ultimate UX and UI Toolset.
Why is it that a thing...
She says to a starving artist.
Yeah. We're starting the Unstarving Artist.
I wish I could pan. I'll have to record him and put
the
it
reason
in.
Why. The reason why. Okay, art.
A Gen Z starving artist.
Gen Z
artist.
Starving artist. Yeah. Uncalled for.
We're switching to angle 2 on the camera.
That is one of our guitar players for later.
Hi.
His name is Logan. Logan.
Hi, Logan.
Give us a piece. Peace. Yeah. Dude, if you've heard Kurt Cobain sing, he is spot on.
Oh, really? So he's
up-and-coming
star?
We could probably do a request for like a little Nirvana session at the beginning of this jam.
But guys, seriously, like art is the thing that moves us, stops us in our tracks, right? A beautiful song, that thing hanging on the wall, words that reverberate in your head your whole life. They move us the deepest.
It is true.
Right?
Even like art and nature.
Exactly.
Like a rainbow or a sunset.
Exactly. They move you so deeply, you stop. And that's what you share. You share art constantly. These words are beautiful. This picture's stunning. This piece of music. It's what you share.
It's very insightful.
But we don't pay the creators. Why? I mean, we pay like 1% of creators.
Well, I think we started with the wrong system.
Right. And... We think...
She said I was right.
You're absolutely right. We did. We did start with the wrong system.
We're going to watch this.
One point, Jason.
We're going to watch this and fact check it. It's going to be like a presidential debate.
Yeah, you know, right now, if someone says like, hey, I want to be an artist, a musician, a writer. Oh, for your poor parents. How are you ever going to earn an income?
I hear that. My son's a guitar player. He's a musician.
And luckily, he's got the right father. They're probably not going to talk him out of it, I assume.
But what are you going to do with that?
You're
always like, how are you going to earn a living from that? And why can't we earn a living for it? You're creating the thing that people people want most.
We're going to figure that out.
Right. People want it the most.
So
James and we're on a mission.
Art is data. And the intent to view art
Unstarving artist movement, Logan. We got this. Logan's like, please.
He's like, stop
pulling me into this. We got this. Yeah.
But he's good at starving. That's the problem. He's gotten used
starving
to
starving is good because it fuels you to do better. But it shouldn't have to be that artists are starving. It shouldn't have to be that artists have to get day jobs as like bartenders or at Walgreens, right?
Yeah,
that it shouldn't have to be. Because the more they do that, the less time they have to create art.
Which means the less time they have to build something that will stop us in our tracks.
That's right.
And change the way we view our day.
Right. And then they don't get to build expertise and mentorship and leadership qualities because they're too busy.
So this gets back to the whole education thing I brought up earlier.
That's right.
In our STEM program. Mm. I mean, I believe in STEM.
I believe
everybody
in STEM.
Everybody needs
I believe in STEAM.
To be technical.
Yeah.
STEAM. Mm. So you put art in there. That's the A.
Oh.
Yeah. How clever are
fancy.
You?
I didn't make it up.
You didn't make it up?
No. Lots of people say that. They're like, can you please talk about STEAM instead of
and
STEM?
Luckily they put
yeah, but
it
we
response.
Don't fund STEAM because STEAM, the A, doesn't make
pay.
Any money.
It's because people who graduate in art aren't able to give back because they don't make any money. What are you going to give back?
Yeah, my son, one of the bands he's in, the other two kids, their parents have already said, no art, right? You can play your guitar while you're in high school. After that, you've got to go be an engineer.
Wow.
A minion.
Man. I mean, I say
I like
this
minions.
As an engineer.
Minions are good. Yeah, but you're an engineer and an artist at the same time.
Absolutely.
And I think when you boil science down, the most beautiful science is the science based in art.
Absolutely. It's the most creative engineers, they create the best stuff. You make the best products by far, right? You think Surface Studio was created by a bunch of nerds who didn't know how to draw? No.
No, absolutely not.
No, the way the angle
yeah,
of the
that's
drafting
so, that,
table,
that just,
right?
There was almost no computer science involved in that.
It's but when you look at
which was so nice.
You look at the angle of the drafting table; it's flawless. That's not made by someone who's never drafted, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That's not it.
And the idea that you can change mm-hmm.
yeah,
and do art at the same time—you don't have to go down to your little pad and your
little
keyboard.
Was that made by someone by pure computer science? And computer scientists can also be all these other things, but they use that other part of their brain.
And often are. A lot of the, you know, the Nobel Prizes in science are they're artists, musicians.
Right.
They're,
because we're multifaceted
magicians
humans.
Magicians even. Right.
People love to put us in these categories. Like, people ask me all the time, they're like, when are you going to quit tech and go into fashion? And I said, why would this be even a question? Right? What's wrong with the and? The and is working out
why
for
not
the
both?
They don't oppose each other.
Yeah.
In fact, the world would be better off if Farmer. Everybody thought they didn't oppose each other.
Exactly. So you don't need to choose one or the other. And I actually believe the next generation will refuse to choose because why? They've been doing both since they were born. So when you grow up and suddenly you have to like follow some old person's opinion? No.
So do the, you know, I always wonder, like, do the technical people go away then? You know, if it's really about everything else, I mean,
being able to code is going to be the last job standing. Think about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So guys, technical just means being able to write code.
Yeah.
If someone's able to write English, do you ask them, can you do anything else other than write English? Obviously, it's just a skill. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean just because you know how to write code doesn't mean that's all you do for a living.
Right.
And just because you have a job as an artist doesn't mean you can't write code. It's just a literacy.
Yeah.
Like knowing Spanish doesn't mean you can't also know French, right? Or also create art.
Coding is really more important than writing in cursive.
Exactly. Oh, way more. The fact that they teach cursive writing still and not coding is hilarious.
Some schools actually did drop it, so.
Yeah, the schools where my kids go, they recently stopped that, and they started coding clubs kind of at the same time. So that's really exciting.
I think teaching coding is important, but I also think it's very important to continue to teach art because those are not, they're not, it's not one or the other. It should never be one or the other, because teaching coding is like, teaching you to read and write English, Chinese, whatever, right? But teaching art is important to free the brain. Like, did you guys watch those videos on how drawing changes the brain?
It does.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. It changes the way you see the world because you're actually seeing like a shape in front of you and how you recreate it. You draw the shape around the object.
And it's both instant.
Yes.
Right? And it's permanent. Over time, it will change the brain.
But when you create by hand.
So never stop teachers. Never stop kids from doodling. Let them doodle while they're listening to you.
And what I always tell my kids is like all the research that I've seen says that you're not fixing, you know, your brain is not set in stone.
That's right.
So, you know, we always, growing up, you know, you always hear people say like, oh, you're not good at this thing, but you're good at this thing. And
right now,
whenever you tell people they're not good at something, it's a really bad thing to say.
Yeah,
to
like God, right here at this moment in time.
Jason, you're really lousy at hosting shows. Yeah. Really bad.
James, look who's here.
go listen to our first episode. it is proof that somebody can get better at something. Not necessarily great.
I'm not better at anything. I think people can learn anything.
Yeah.
And seriously, if you want to learn something, you can learn that thing.
Careful.
You don't need to be the best
careful,
in the world.
Right. I mean, if I wanted to learn, you know, to be as good a guitar player as Logan.
No, you're
I wouldn't
not
be
saying,
able to do
you're
it.
Not saying as good as compared to someone else. Right. You're saying you want to learn to play the guitar with all your
heart.
Okay,
you can learn. But you to be learn. Really good at something, you got to find the things that your brain naturally gravitates to.
I think there's things your brain gravitates to because it wants to.
Yeah, so nurture that.
Yeah, nurture that. And you're willing to spend nights, weekends obsessing over it. Or you're not. You'd rather speak than play the guitar.
I would, right?
So there. Are you going to ever quit speaking?
But the thing is, you know, I don't know if there's a natural thing for people. Right?
When
people say, oh, you're lucky you're so good on stage.
No.
I work to get there.
People
will tell my son, oh, you're so lucky to be musical.
No, it's not lucky.
Look at my bloody fingers from playing, you know, eight hours in a row, right? It takes work. Michael Jordan isn't lucky.
No.
Marie Curie isn't lucky.
No.
George Washington Carver isn't lucky.
No.
They work really hard at something that their brain naturally gravitates to.
Yes.
That's
like
the thing you're going
to
get really, really good.
I like that. The things that your brain naturally gravitates toward.
Your brain has a predisposition to what it wants to know.
I am obsessive about certain things, and I get good at those things. And people are like, oh, you're so good
amazing.
At that. And it's like, it's just because my brain
became good at it all the time.
Yeah.
You go from having an inclination to doing it all the time, mm-hmm. and then you're good at it. Like an artist is not someone who has an art degree, right? We were talking about this yesterday. You don't need an art degree to be an artist. You need to have an interest, an inclination, and then just do it. And you're an artist. You definitely, no amount of art certification is going to give you the artist handle.
I wonder if we're moving to a world where all these degrees and certifications mm-hmm. won't matter at some
That's
point.
That's right. It's not going to.
It's going to be.
It already does.
You built some art, and now that everyone has access to it, who accesses it the most?
Yeah,
how much
already,
does it change their lives?
Yeah, we're already seeing that in the interesting fields. I mean, look at what we're in. I mean, if you're in the tech industry,
we're in an interesting field.
It only
awesome.
Yeah.
I'm so happy to hear that.
It only matters. I tell people because they're like, "Do I need to go to college for this?" Like, yes, you do to get started.
Ish. Yeah. Yeah.
No, you don't. And, yeah.
Well, ish.
It's the catapult.
Ish is growing bigger.
It's more like,
year.
Do you, right. you want to go to college to talk to other people who are doing similar things? So you have people to complain to.
Some of the best programmers I know don't have any degrees at all. In fact, the very best programmer I know has a degree in freaking English literature.
50% of apps written by non-computer science.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like, just like I think 95% of books are written by non-English majors because they're too busy analyzing literature to write.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
Right? It's true. And I think the certification-ness is really good for building relationships with other people who are kind of in your boat, but not necessarily it's the only way to learn a thing, especially if teachers aren't the experts.
And they're not. Right.
Right.
By definition, they're not the expert.
Right, because they're rather
which
than,
goes back to the curator.
They're not creating. They're busy reporting on.
They're never going to be an expert at anything mm-hmm. because they're too busy teaching everything. They can be curators.
They're teaching everything,
they
but
the
they're also teaching things that were relevant like back in the day when they were studying it. Right. So it's really hard to be a teacher who stays up to date on things when you're not out there creating.
It shouldn't be. The teachers have access to everything.
Right. But they
shouldn't view themselves as experts.
I think they should be creating. And curating, right? And the only way to test your creating or test your curation technique is by creating, right? How can I say I'm a good curator? How can I say this site has good data when I've never used it to make something? Why? Because someone said so? Go use it. How can you say Hackster.io, that project is really good, if I haven't gone and put GPS dots on things? How?
Well, data should show that, right? The over time, the data should lead people to where the real value is in this, whatever we, it's the web, the cloud, whatever.
They have to be able to know how to read that data, though.
Or the machines do, and the machines need to know, hey, you're trying to create this thing.
Yeah.
And all these other creators found that over there really good, so you should use that over there.
I don't think the machines are there yet.
They're not, but they need to be. And that's where the real business opportunity is, making the machines be able to do things like that.
So when you when we talk about machines, A&I, right? And again, this is something I talked to a friend about yesterday. The artificial part, 90%, the intelligence part, 1%, or 10%. We need the humans to do that I part, to correct, right? To say, good, good, good. No, there's a failure. Let's see why.
Well, at least today we do.
I think we're always going to need a little bit of human, right? Because we're very emotional, fragile, delicate creatures. We're kind of ridiculous. We are the most complex organism on earth, right? We're so moody, my goodness. Right, we are. Like, one day we're like, oh, this is a great idea.
Are you calling me moody?
I'm looking directly at you.
Are you calling me moody?
Directly.
I didn't say anything.
I am not moody.
You're not moody, James.
Okay, so we talked about privacy earlier, and I don't know if you want to make any comments on that, but the next topic then I think would be like security, right?
Yes, oh my gosh, so important. Cybersecurity, study that. Okay, guys.
No, that is actually really good. Really
study
good
that.
Study that.
Study that. Study
so,
that a
but
lot.
I have a theory about cybersecurity in the Internet
you
of Things
era. You know what's
scary?
Here's what's scary. Your computer gets hacked. That's scary. Your PC or phone get hacked. It's annoying, right? It's annoying. You have to go reset everything. What a pain. Your house or your car get hacked. You're haunted. You got a freaking poltergeist in there. That is scary. Scary.
Scary?
Study it.
That's why I don't
have any... It's data. I love getting hacked because then I have something to study.
Someone hack his house.
No, don't hack my house. Those people live
Sharon's
in my house.
Sharon's over there like, don't do that, please. Hi. Hi. Yeah.
Well, especially when
James's
they had those
wife
baby
is
monitors.
Over there.
Yeah. Those baby monitors that were getting hacked and there was
so
like people
James's wife
speaking.
Is like, why are you saying hack my house? Yeah.
It's a good idea. It's
he
data.
Do you want your new house to get hacked for data?
We need the second camera angle.
No. She's like, hell.
There's the artist pool.
The artist pool.
So look, security is going to get easier in the Internet of Things. Bear with me here, because the human will be removed from the equation.
The human will be removed
because it's going
from
to be,
the equation.
It's going to be machine
this is not
to machine to machine.
Sounding at all.
Yeah, I'm not going to remove
I
them.
Bow
they
down
will just
to
not
IoT
be there.
Overlords.
Right, think about it. If machines are communicating with machines,
is he a machine?
They don't need...
They call me a bot.
They don't need, you know, to remember passwords. They will remember passwords perfectly. The passwords can be huge. They can communicate constantly passing back authentication strings. Mm-hmm. There's no human in the loop that is going to screw it up by having a password 1234. And so when you remove humans from that security loop, security gets really good really fast.
And we know how to do security. Like the security issues that have happened have just been
mostly
ridiculous.
Human problems.
I know. And it's been just giving IoT a bad name. I always say, whenever somebody says IoT caused this issue, put in the word computer.
IoT did not cause this issue.
Computers are insecure because
we don't know
humans.
How to build IoT.
Well, because
correctly.
We hacked them together and we didn't think about security because we didn't think about security.
We were like,
which
oh,
is
it's
the same way.
Too.
But it's
we'll
the same
it
way.
Later.
We didn't think about security when we first started programming computers
certainly
either,
not.
Right? So everything new, security is kind of the last. Okay, let's bolt this
we
shit
all,
on.
Because
but in the Internet of Things, humans aren't going to be involved, which means security, in theory, could be really freaking good.
Mm-hmm.
However, once you do manage to penetrate that, and they will figure it out, if there's a single small hole, the hackers will figure it out. Once you breach the Internet of Things, you're in. All the machines are going to trust you.
Yeah.
And the amount of damage you can do and the length of time that you can go undetected is really freaking scary. But in the beginning stages, security is going to get way better. Because humans aren't going to be there having stupid passwords and doing stupid things.
I do agree with that. But I think that we need humans to predict human behavior. Our behavior is going to change as we live in this world where there are more robots and things, right? And more machines. If you talk to the guy who invented, what is that spinning vacuum cleaner thingy?
Dyson? The Roomba?
That. Yeah.
It's a good, I was out of vacuum cleaner names. We're like, I'm so glad I got that right.
I know, yes. The Roomba.
I didn't know it was spinning.
Hoover.
The Roomba.
Do we still have Hoovers? Are they still making their
space? Is that still a thing?
I don't know.
They're actually a big thing.
Yeah. Are they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So right now, robots really struggle with computer vision, right? So that guy, he's saying robot technology has not improved, notice, that much in like 10 years. Because he says you people, tech people, have been fixated on making like Uber for fresh fruit rather than like working on robots. We're like, yeah, that's true.
We never tackled that really deep problem.
Exactly, because we tackle like the get rich quick scheme rather than tackling like, this is hard.
This industry does like to get rich.
We love get rich quick schemes. Like so rich. Then we like to replicate like the same dumb thing over and over. And he's like, it's your fault, actually. We're like, okay, we can't say anything. But computer vision has not gotten better in a long time. It's getting better slowly compared to what it could. So he said the problem that robots have is if you've got parts like this, a robot can't differentiate between them. Its vision is just not good enough to pattern match between these and pull them apart. So that's why these Roombas are now being used to clean out landmines. Giant Roombas are being used to clean out landmines in Afghanistan. But we haven't made...
Is it because they're getting better or because we're okay with them blowing up?
We're okay with them blowing up.
Yeah.
And they haven't been able to do more sophisticated things. So here's another issue. Everyone's super stressed. Like,
are they actually vacuuming in Afghanistan at the same time?
Or did they disable the beater bar?
I think they disabled
Look how
like,
clean
the
Afghanistan is.
Good job, Afghanistan.
We clean it up.
I think they just like... but you know how... what was I saying? Something relevant. I forgot.
Then there's debris and you have to send another one.
I love interrupting people while they're saying something.
And you're
relevant.
Like,
come on, somebody else say
it?
Something
someone
relevant.
Someone say something
Go
else.
Go on, say it.
Someone say something useful.
No, it's Carl. He can't say anything relevant. He's
beat up. Aw, he's so mean.
I love Carl.
He's just way on. I'm here to be beat up on, really.
Oh.
Bros don't love each other until they've insulted each other back and forth.
Yeah, it's pretty
See,
right
this is a this is seriously guy code.
This is a bro.
I'm sorry. I publicly talked about guy code.
You talked about dude code. Dude code be like, what?
Even the guy with the green hair out there gets it.
He's like, he's shaking his head like, I don't know these
No, it's blue. Turn it. No, it's blue, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's blue-green. It's teal. That's
we
pretty,
like it. We've got
freaking
a...
rocket. You should sit over there with the artists, man.
You should. You look like you belong at the art table. The art
and
table.
Now it's my turn to drink your beer.
There you go. You sing this? Yeah.
It's good, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. So, we know. Everyone's super worried. The robots are going to take our jobs.
I'm not worried about that.
No, I'm not. Here's why. Because the jobs...
I'm old enough to die before they... Oh.
That's not why.
He's got enough in his 401k.
That's not why. It's because the jobs that the robots are taking, no human wants. Because it's so mind-numbing that everyone quits after a week. Right? Like, put this part
on
this
thing. I want
the
robots to do those jobs.
Yeah.
Everyone does. Even the people, like, you look at these factories in China, it's like, put this part on here.
They want people to do it. They're jumping off of, you know, out of windows and stuff to run from their factory job.
They can't convince someone to do it for more than a week because the human mind is set to innovate. They can't do the same repetitive task. They feel like they're dying.
Which means that goes back to the education and just how important this is.
That's right.
Right. If there's not those menial jobs, if there's not the labor-intensive jobs, if the future,
it
and I believe it
up.
Is, the future is about this organ up here, not anything else that we have, we're going to have to do a really good job of nurturing that.
Yeah, I agree.
So if people stop being pissed off at robots taking their jobs,
robots aren't going to take your
jobs. That would be a very good sign for humanity.
Seriously, robots are not going to take your jobs. Robots, no. The jobs that robots can do, you do not want anyway. Seriously, you don't want that job. You're not going to do it. Even if you think you're going to do it, you're not for more than a week.
Well, and I think the younger generation, I mean, my son, he did not want to drive. I remember when I was his age, driving was a rite of passage. We wanted to do it at 14. We got fake IDs to drive.
Now no one wants to drive. Yeah, now no one wants to drive.
He didn't want to drive. He could care less. Wow. My daughter could care less. They were, I'm begging them at 17, 18, 19.
That was like the passage into like adulthood. It was like, hey, I can drive.
And so robots can do this.
Right. It they are.
Support your point. No one wants to do the things that robots can do.
No one wants to. Now people will drive for maybe fun and recreation, but not to get anywhere.
Yeah.
They're like, why? I could just like read or like do this the whole time.
Our kids are, our kids are going to look at us and say, oh my God, you drove? What are you, stupid?
Like with, was there horses and a buggy too?
You put me in a
car,
in a car
seat? That you drove? Do you know how dangerous that is?
Don't you
love me, Mommy? Did you smoke too at the same time? Like, how dumb are you? Because, you know, that's how everyone dies.
We smoked and texted and didn't wear our seatbelts.
Really?
Well, we didn't text. We didn't have text.
Yeah.
We ate burgers and put on makeup and stuff.
You had to fine-tune the radio, though.
Yeah, and change the channel on the radio.
They were like, and you put me in this
and
desk
flipped
trap
off the guy
machine.
Next to us because he's an asshole.
See, most young people now, they don't know where radio buttons came from. Yeah. It was literal buttons on the radio that actually went dink and you push one and the other one
come out. Yeah.
And people don't know where radio buttons
came
from.
I see you're older than you look, man.
I had a car with radio buttons.
James and I talked about how phones used to be tethered to walls.
They did. Yep. Yeah. Tethered.
For a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. With those really, really long cords.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember when we got the 25-foot cord as opposed to the 8-foot cord.
Oh, liberating.
I could almost make it to the other end of the kitchen to talk to my girlfriend so my parents wouldn't hear. Almost could get there.
You rebel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it wound around like that, and you had to sort of, you know, turn to...
This conversation, people. Seriously.
All right, so let's get this back a little
Carl
bit on track.
Will fix this. This is what he's here for.
You want to talk about technical stuff, Carl?
No, actually, I don't. Like, you have something to sell us, actually, and I wanted to talk
t-shirts.
About it. Other than T-shirts.
Ooh, everyone's asking about these. Did you bring some?
Oh, you can't.
I didn't have a bag of them.
You, okay.
Yeah, bag
all right.
of them.
Okay.
Yep. Charity.
Hey, all of you yesterday who are like, T-shirts.
Is that what you're here for, a T-shirt?
Of course.
Yep.
Sweet.
And to do selfies with
us. I take PayPal.
All right. So you have something else to sell us, something that we can get online.
I wrote a book. I did.
Nobody writes books.
I wrote a book. Mm. She writes books.
We both write books. Yeah. Lots of them.
In fact, she reviewed my book.
Okay. Reviewed his book.
She helped. Found a couple bugs. Told me I was wrong a few times.
Just a few times.
Just a few. See, that's an improvement.
So Carl's read half your book, apparently.
So, yeah. I had a fly out here, so I had time
Carl,
to...
Carl, you put it down. I'm... Okay.
That's
I'm
it.
Okay.
Storm off, Diva.
It's okay.
Diva off the stage.
I'm okay.
Diva that way.
What sentence turned you off?
Uh-oh.
What was
it
that?
It was actually when the pilot says that we're landing in Seattle.
Okay.
You don't
All
have,
right.
You
good,
don't,
Carl.
You don't have to put away books. Those aren't. He's those don't count as large electronic devices.
Good. Your beer was just as good as mine.
It was better.
Really?
It's my beer. Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
So okay. Your book does relate to the conversation we've had today. So I thought, you know, maybe you should just bring it up. So if people wanted to check it out, they could.
So it comes from this whole idea that, you know, I watch my kids go through school, study all this STEM, and how everyone was just so focused on learn what it takes to get a job working for someone else so that you can survive.
Right.
And I thought, what's wrong with this picture? Why aren't we teaching creativity? And the fact that, you know, my wife had to volunteer at the school to teach art just so they had art. Otherwise, there was nothing there, right?
It's sad.
Right? Yes. It's sad. It's really sad, isn't it? And so I got to kind of be very interested in this creative process because I realized it's not my technical skill. My title is Distinguished Engineer. It's a badass title. But there's really nothing.
He's very distinguished.
She's calling me old here. There's nothing distinguished about my engineering. The thing, if anything distinguishes me, is the quality of my ideas. It's the depth of my insight. And so I began to kind of watch myself work and understand why I was successful. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, meeting people like Donna, the reason that, you know, we're friends is because
we terrorize each other.
We hit it off creatively. Right. She heard me give a talk and she's like, there's some stuff.
Stalking and harassing kids. Stalking and harassing. What did you just say? She came up and did what?
I love the translation.
But we hit it off creatively.
Yeah, this is true.
And then you said
one smart thing in 3 hours. I like that.
You said something smart.
No,
I thought
he
just wants
a
T-shirt.
No, not pointing.
Leave this poor man alone.
No, okay. This is what I said to James. You said one smart thing.
Yeah,
I wrote it down.
And it was a 4-hour talk.
He said a smart thing, and I wrote it down. Yeah, and I said I wrote it down.
One smart thing.
I never write down anything.
4 hours, Donna.
Hey, that's more than most.
No, 4 hours. Yeah, actually, that's true. But, you know, just because I'm better than
thing.
The zombie presenters around me doesn't mean...
Usually I just get up and leave, but I stayed, and I wrote down the smart thing you said.
And so I started studying these smart things and realized that creativity is really a journey, and it has a start, and there are some certain really important inflection points that if you don't take, you won't become creative.
Yes.
And so I started studying it, I started teaching it, started talking to smart people, smart creative people like Donna, and a pattern emerged, and it just had to come out, you know? And so I wrote a book called The 7 Stages of Creativity, and there are seven.
There are seven.
Which is interesting because creativity is
no,
the sixth stage. Okay, but that's...
You gotta buy the book to
the next book. Done. Don't,
to hear the secret.
Don't devalue. My current
but
book.
But I don't like hiding things.
All right, so there's an eighth, and the eighth is how to monetize your creativity. not just monetize, but get your creativity out to the masses.
How not to work at Walgreens while being a creative.
So what was the one thing you wrote down?
Start with the killer opening line. The first slide is the only one that matters.
Yeah, the only one that matters. Oh.
If you get them on slide one, you got them.
Yeah.
And if you lose them on slide one, they're
done. Yeah, that was the only thing. Yeah, that's the one thing I still do to this day. Everything else, he's like, wave your arms over here, stomp over here, and I always forget.
That first line, you could fall off the stage halfway through. That first line.
The first line.
You've not done that, have you? I've seen the heels you walk around in. If I had to walk on those things, I would fall off stage.
I haven't fallen off stage, though. But the first line, the killer, you got him on the first slide, the first line, you got him.
It's the opt-in point. And many presenters don't do that.
Because they think you're going to have another
amazing
I'm
so naturally interesting. Everybody's going to love me.
Right.
This topic is so cool. Everybody's going to love it.
They start off with their credits or whatever.
Their resume.
Their accolades. Yeah.
Don't give me your resume.
I hate that. You shouldn't have to introduce who you are. If you do, keep it short.
I never introduce myself, and I love the tweets. You're like, who is this fucker?
They do say that.
So the other one is, I hate it whenever they say, here's what I'm going to talk about.
You're like, just talk about it.
You know, that was actually written advice. That was written advice by somebody. I'm not going to call them out, but it's like, tell them what you're going to say.
Or
say
just
it,
tell them.
And then tell them what you said.
You're like, just say it.
You're going to treat them like morons? Is this your advice?
Just say it.
Yeah.
Hey, everyone in the audience, you're stupid.
Yeah.
I'm smart.
That's a great way to win an audience over.
Yeah. I love in my speeches, and I learned this from James as well, to relay the dirty secrets from your own life. Like all the times that you screwed up. Tell those stories.
Yeah, personally.
I love those
parts
stories.
Of my family are over there. Be careful with those dirty secrets.
They feature a lot, so.
They do. I tell stories about all of them.
All of them.
All
every
of them.
Last one of them.
All of them.
Yes. Every.
So before we give away too much of your book, one of the other pieces is Finish Strong. So yeah. Jason, do you want to help us finish strong here with these, the game we do every week?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Can I play?
No,
I want to play.
Okay. Who wants to go first?
Me.
Okay, Donna.
Do you realize this is not actually Donna Sarkar? This is a hologram.
Hologram. Yeah, it's not even real.
She's not here. Look, I can put my hands completely
actually,
through
I have
her.
I have a question. I have a hologram question first.
Hi, you guys have to come be on the camera. Come hug.
Oh, here we go.
I don't care if this
you
is.
Can't
a hug
a hologram.
It doesn't
work.
It's an object made of light.
What do you have to prove?
How are you? I'm
great. It went right through.
Oh, that's cool.
We'll switch
how
to
are
the.
You?
Switching the angle too. Here.
Are these Windows insiders that have just?
Well, Avi. I mean, hello.
Where is it? I want to see your brand.
Oh, I'm gonna brand them now. Yeah, I brought up.
Oh, you brought tattoos for everybody. Oh,
there you go. See, they're appropriately branded.
All right, what's our game?
Okay.
We have to play a game.
Oh, I almost cheated.
Actually, it doesn't matter. There's no right answer.
I only win when I cheat.
Okay, here we go. You need to pick a number between 1 and 4, inclusive.
Okay. And tell us.
Inclusive?
And you have to tell me what it is.
So 5
is
not a possibility.
Why?
Correct.
All right, I'll have 3.
Hey, we have...
Why?
She already called going first.
Why?
See, she's like rules or someone else's opinion.
We've had people
why between 1 and 4.
When I originally would say between 1 and 4, people would be like, well, that's only 2 and 3.
No, but why? Why do we have to pick a number?
But it's a safe choice.
No, before I, this
just
why,
in case,
I say inclusive.
The endpoints aren't included.
No, I say inclusive.
But why do we have
that.
To pick a number?
We're randomizing the seed for the game.
So,
why do you roll dice in Monopoly?
I don't know.
It's part of
I
the
think
fucking
it's
game.
Otherwise, I will.
Why
give
are you,
you
listening
question.
To like right. old so, rules made by Monopoly? So, that's
because I want
to
play the game.
No, why isn't it a wheel?
Donna doesn't want to play. Let's just play.
I want to. But I want to know
I
why.
Picked 3.
No.
Okay, James.
I'm
is
a
going
Windows
first
insider.
Now.
We ask questions.
You
right?
I don't ask why.
We ask
I just,
questions. Now, I ask why
I
all
just
the time.
Go. I'm a mean.
Like, you tell me what to
now
do.
Now you're going second. So James, what is your
so
number?
You go first.
3.
Now.
3.
Now
okay.
You're gonna get the bad one.
Oh, I did that 3 already. Here's a new 3.
They've known your number is 3 for a while.
This is a game for kids. This isn't like some intellectual thing. So,
that's good.
While on
that's
a camping trip, would you rather wake up with ants in your nose and ears? Or with a toe in your mouth from someone else who is
toes.
Also sleeping in your tent.
Ew.
Oh, toes. I love toes.
Oh.
I mean, ants are not better than a human body part.
Yeah.
I mean, it, you know, I wouldn't
this week in fetishes.
Select the toe, but you gave me that option.
Your family's hearing this.
we're recording, so you can play it back to them.
Oh, man. It's starting to get busy in here now.
This is a great
It was ants versus toes. What are you going to choose?
Ants versus toes.
Okay, Donna.
Although there's good protein in ants, I hear.
Okay, which number would you like?
What's on them?
other questions that are in similar
you
nature.
You want to pick your question or what?
She's not good
okay,
with
go
rules.
Ahead. Go ahead.
See? No, I get
she's not good with rules.
I just
you
rather,
I pick
I give
my
up.
Question.
I give up.
Amateur hour, children. Amateur.
No, this is,
guys,
this
I
is
get
preference
to pick my
for
question.
Holograms.
No,
that's what this is.
It's
discrimination against real people. We're all going to be subservient to the holograms in the future. You see it happening right now.
He randomly chose. I want to know the question.
She's
would you rather?
Cheating.
Yeah, of course. Would you rather always read with one eye shut or talk with your teeth clenched together? I would rather read with one eye shut.
I would not.
No one asked you, though.
I would not choose that.
That wasn't your question, because you didn't ask me.
Is this why I seem angry all the time? Listen to me.
No one can understand you, champ.
Oh, shoot.
For being a speech person.
That's too bad, because I said something so profound.
No, you didn't. No,
you missed it all.
Don't worry.
Software is the opposable thumb for the human mind.
Rules are someone else's opinion.
Well,
you said that with both eyes open. That's cheating. See,
reading.
Holograms,
reading.
Man.
Yeah.
I shouldn't even ask this, but is there anything else that you guys want to mention before we let you go?
Keep hustling.
I'm going to go fight with her.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you both so
thank
much
you.
For coming on here. This was an awesome discussion.
Thank you.
And now we're going to spend a couple hours like hanging out with fans.
Rolling with the peeps.
MVPs.
No
he's commandeered the beer.
No, this is awesome because we have a whole bunch of MVPs here, and I love
hi,
it because...
Hi, MVPs.
Because
and Windows Insiders,
be
too.
On camera?
And Insiders.
Jump,
they are
jump
the biggest
in.
Fans.
Jump in. Hi.
How you doing,
how
man?
Are you?
All right, is he a hologram or is he real?
Definitely a hologram. Bots.
Definitely a hologram.
We're bots.
And real.
Insider MVPs, kids. The best kind.
Oh, so we've got a the brand intersection of insiders yeah. and MVPs right here. Do MVPs have a brand, a tattoo? Yeah.
No.
Well, he's...
No, just a button?
Yeah.
Just a button.
We got brands.
Just a button or...
We're augmenting our humans. Look,
yeah,
he's
but,
got a
yeah,
shirt
but hang on a second. The MVP button gets
we
me free
brands.
Beer.
We need
brands. No, we need to brand you guys.
Does that yeah. get free beer?
We have more.
Oh, she brought them.
Right.
But it doesn't get them free beer. Why? What does it do?
It's okay. They still like it. Just shut up.
No, you don't belong to the cult.
What does
so
it do?
Don't.
Does it keep them from programming yes. in an Apple or a Google environment forever? Is that what it does? Is it something insidious?
Is it laced with something?
It might be. If he says, sir.
Well, see, you need to go in the bathroom and go in
surface.
The stall.
Surface.
See, and you. Yeah. There's you need like you need like a private something. Location
oh,
to apply
yeah. test.
Yes.
It's definitely drugs.
Go and
this is beer, I hope.
That's beer, yeah.
Which one?
This is the winter ale.
The winter
what are you going to do with her okay. beer that became mine?
Yeah, this was no common
what are your designs
beer is
on this
not
beer?
Oh. He's like, it's almost empty, so none.
We are from Germany. Where,
I know.
Know
he's like
there's actually a German. There's a German lager on tap here. Yeah.
He's like
yeah. not a bad
beer,
one.
Beer
not
was invented.
Not bad at all.
He's okay. like I invented
it's, the
beer.
Words
you're
like
welcome.
That fucking long ago.
Yeah.
I can't pronounce
yeah.
it.
Yeah. No,
but
no,
I think
no.
you'll enjoy it.
He's
that's
like,
every German.
I invented beer. You're welcome. Deal with it. Good luck.
Germans have long.
Okay. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on and talking to us.
Yeah.
Please leave.
They're like, this is adorable. Please go.
All right, here. Thank you, Jason.
Okay. Thank you.
That was awesome.
Thank you. All right.